find it very interesting that your theme song, that though time and the world may pass away, God's word shall forever endure. Our subject tonight, a biblical view of climate change. I am not a climatologist. I'm not a meteorologist. I'm not a theologian. I'm not a philosopher. But for some reason, I was given this topic. And we want to look at it in a biblical way. And God bless us in our study this evening. Several months ago, I was still selling gravestones. I received a phone call from a lady from Colorado. And she wanted to know about the quality of stone that I was selling, whether the engraving would last or not, whether the stone would erode away or whether it would endure. And I assured her that this is not marble. This is not sandstone. This is not something that erodes away. This is granite. And when you carve granite, that carving stays. And I said, if you could come back 5,000 years from now, if the world is still standing, that carving would be just like the day we carved it, just as deep. Oh, she said, I think that's so cute. If the world's still standing, of course the world's going to be standing 5,000 years from now. It's inhabited by intelligent people who are going to preserve it. Oh, well, there's somebody that's not worried about global warming and climate change and all that. She's very confident in the intelligence of the people that are living on the earth. What a surprise. Lots of other people are very, very concerned. We used to hear about global warming. We still hear that term sometimes. But lately, the last several years, we've heard more about climate change. I used to have a misconception about that in which I said, well, you know what? Back there about 2007, there was about 3 years where the temperature dipped down just a little bit. And so they changed the terminology from global warming to climate change because we had a few years that were a little bit cooler. Well, that's not exactly right. Yes, we did have a little bit of a decrease in temperatures in those years. But the change in terminology is not because of that. The change in terminology is because they have broadened the study. The study used to be global warming. But now it includes such things as temperature, precipitation, and wind speed, and how that affects the amount of storms and the severity of the storms that we experience on the earth. And they're looking for causes. They're coming to some conclusions that some of these factors are caused by mankind and our activities, our human activity on the globe. So what we used to think of several years ago as acts of God, or maybe the disruption caused by demons, today they're looking for ways in which man is causing these things rather than God or the demons. And so who really is doing it? Is it God? Is it the demons? Or is it man that's causing these changes in climate? Not all people who believe in climate change are atheists. Some of it is. And sometimes I hear people make comments, and I may have made some of these comments also, that if these people who are concerned about climate change would just believe that there is a God who is in control, they wouldn't have to worry about this. They could relax and enjoy life because but they don't believe God, and they reject God, and they believe in evolution, and that's what causes all these fears to come up. But if you study who it is that's calling for studies and for actions to control climate change and to eliminate it, or at least to control it. Some of these people are very religious. Some of them are Democrats. Some are Republicans. Some are very liberal. Some are very conservative. And it crosses many lines, and we can't put all the people who are concerned about climate change into one basket because they don't fit there. There are people from many different persuasions that are concerned about climate change, and that's where some of the confusion comes in this study about climate change. Some of them are really earth worshipers who have their concern more about the earth than they do about God, and more about the earth than they do about spiritual things. Some of them tie their concerns to their spiritual beliefs and their beliefs about the Bible. I would like to look at some of that tonight, and rather than looking into so much the atheists and all of that, but why would people who are very religious, very sincere about their Christian profession, why would they be concerned about climate change? So to begin, we're going to look at Genesis chapter 1 and verse 28, where we have the verse that God created man and woman, and God blessed them. And God said to them, to Adam and Eve, Genesis 1, 28, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And this is called the cultural command that God has given to man, that man is to have dominion over the earth. Man is to subdue it. Man is to preserve it. And if he uses something of the earth, he is to replenish it in whatever way he can. And there are some things that are consumable that can never be replaced, such as fossil fuels. But there are some things that can be replaced. And whatever we use that can be replaced should be replaced. And whatever we use that cannot be replaced should be used very efficiently in preserving the earth. And we would agree with that, I think. We would probably all agree with that, that if we can replace something, we should do so. If we destroy a tree for firewood or for building materials, then to replace it, unless, of course, you're clearing the land for farming or for building, something like that. But if you have a good reason not to replace it, then that's all right. But to replace wherever we can. Now, God has given us this charge, and it has become more difficult since Adam and Eve sinned. It's been more difficult to replace and replenish because of the things that God has brought in, the weeds, the thistles, the storms, and things like that. Our care of the world, or of the earth, has become more difficult. And we know that the whole creation groans and travails in pain, even today. Now, some of these people would see that mankind is using things and not replacing them. They are indiscriminately using natural resources that are irreplaceable, such as fossil fuels. They are polluting the atmosphere. They are polluting streams and oceans. And there's that large body of trash that is floating in the middle of the oceans that is gathered there by those ocean currents. And you have miles and miles of plastics and metals, woods, that are light metals like soda cans and so on, that are floating there on the ocean. And they're seeing that there is a day coming in which God is going to judge people for polluting the earth rather than taking care of it, as he charged them back here in Genesis chapter 1, 28. So they'll read a verse like Revelation 11, 18. The nations were angry, and thy wrath has come in the time of the dead, that they should be judged. And thou shouldest give reward unto thy servants, the prophets, and to the saints, to them that fear thy name, small and great. And shouldest destroy them that destroy the earth. So one of the reasons God is going to come back and judge people is because they have destroyed the earth. And they have not kept this command here in Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. They have polluted the earth. They polluted the streams. They polluted the soil. They polluted the oceans. They polluted the rivers. They polluted the air. And God is going to judge them for destroying the earth, when he has said that we should multiply, replenish, rather than deplete it. So they talk about the stewardship of the earth, and that we are stewards, and certainly we are stewards of the earth. But they're saying that because in the Old Testament, giving the example, that in the Old Testament, when Israel or the Jews did not let the earth rest on the seventh year and on the year of Jubilee, that God sent them into captivity until the land had rest. And there's an example of God giving judgment for not keeping this order to keep the earth and to maintain it, to subdue it, to allow it to be replenished by natural means. I have read in one source where they misapplied John 3:16. From climate change advocates. God so loved the world. You follow? God so loved the earth that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. And so whoever believes in Jesus, the first environmentalist, is not going to perish. And God is going to preserve them. And he's going to make a new heaven and a new earth for them to dwell in. Interesting, isn't it? We worship the creature more than the creator. And they say that God is going to restore the earth. He's going to make it new. And Jesus died to begin that process. And so our mission on earth, our mission efforts, as we go into other cultures where they don't understand the Bible, that instead of preaching to them about moral sins, we ought to preach to them about something that they can see and something they understand, and that would be their environmental issues. And then after they see that, then we can deal with other things. Now, it used to be that the social gospel was what was done, that they went in there and tried to work with economic issues. Today, it's environmental issues as well as some economic as well. Well, let's look at some truths from the Bible. And that is, let's start with Job chapter 37. Job 37. Verses 12 and 13. The wicked plotteth against the just and gnashes against him with his teeth. The Lord shall laugh at him, for he seeth that his day is coming. And then verse 16. I think I have a wrong reference here. But what we see is the balancing of the clouds. I have Psalms. I wanted Job. That's what's wrong. Job 37. Sorry about that. Job 37, verse 12. Verse 11, also that by watering he wearieth the thick cloud, he scatters his bright cloud. It is turned round about by his counsels that they may do whatsoever he commandeth them upon the face of the world in the earth. He causes it to come, whether for correction or for his land or for mercy. God brings the frost. He brings the thick cloud. He brings the bright cloud. It's by his counsels that the earth experiences the weather and the climate that we have. And he balances the clouds in verse 16. Dost thou not know the balancing of the clouds and the wondrous works of him which is perfect in knowledge, how thy garments are warm when he quieteth the earth by the south wind? Hast thou spread out the sky which is strong and as a molten looking glass? Teach us what we shall say unto him, for we cannot utter our speech by reason of darkness. Who controls the climate? Colossians 1, 16 and 17. By him were all things created that are in heaven and in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created for him and by him, and he is before all things, and by him all things consist. And then Hebrews 1, 3, God is upholding all things by the word of his power. His word endures forever. Wonderful, wonderful word of the Lord. Well, has climate changed? Let's look at the first climate, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 4. These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created, in the day that God made the earth and the heavens. And every plant of the field before it was in the earth, and every herb of the field before it grew. For the Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was not a man to till the ground, but there went up a mist from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. That is a description of the first climate. That's before the fall of man. What happened to that climate? Well, we see in Genesis chapter 3 that God brought the curse upon Adam and Eve. In verses 17, to Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till thou return unto the ground, for out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return. My belief is that before the fall, taking care of the garden was a task that could be done in a comfortable way, and that Adam never sweated in taking care of the garden until after he sinned. And after he sinned, he experienced some global warming, which he sweated for the first time, and I don't know how that might have felt to him. For the first time to be working in the field and to sweat. That's global warming. He experienced it right back here in the beginning. Did the climate change again? Absolutely. Genesis chapter 6. Verse 17. Behold, I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. Is that going to happen by the mist that comes up from the ground? Not very likely. Chapter 7, verse 1. The Lord said unto Noah, come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation. And verse 4. For yet 7 days will I cause it to rain upon the earth, 40 days and 40 nights, and every living substance that I have made will I destroy from off the face of the earth. Is that climate change? Absolutely, that's climate change. Now there's rain. and for 40 days, and it's going to give rain that it will flood. And in the sixth day, in the 600th year, verse 11, of Noah's life, in the second month, in the 17th day of the month, the same day, were all the fountains of the deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. Climate change people are saying that the seas are going to rise. Well, that's not the first time. It took place here. Verse 19. And the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. I was told of a man who was looking for some ground down in West Virginia. And it was up on top of at least a high hill, if not a mountain. And as he was walking over the land, he was kicking at some of the pebbles and things that were on the ground, and he came across some seashells. And he said, "I'm not buying this land. This ground was at one time flooded." Absolutely it was. If you read here, it was. Of course it was covered. And that's why we find fossils way up there, high on the mountains. But you know what this tells me? That God controlled it. He put a stop. After the highest hills, after the highest mountains were covered, that was it. He brought an end to the rain. We see that in verse 19 of chapter 7. The waters prevailed exceedingly, and all the high hills under heaven were covered. And then in chapter 8, verse 3, and God remembered Noah and every living thing, and all the cattle that was with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters assuaged. And the fountains also of the deep and the windows of heaven were stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained, and the waters returned from off the earth continually. And after the end of 150 days, the waters were abated. Where did all that water go? Say, well, it ran into the seas. Well, the seas were already full. So where did it go? Well, God, who brought it, somehow dried it off again and brought it back. God was never out of control during this whole time, from the time it started to rain until the waters were abated from the earth. God had a way to maintain it just as he wanted it all along. It operated according to his decree and not to anything that Noah did. Noah was saved because he obeyed God in building that ark and not because he had any power over the climate. Chapter 8, verse 21. The Lord smelled the sweet savor. The Lord said in his heart, "I will not again curse the ground anymore for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite the earth anymore. Neither will I again smite any more every living thing as I have done. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease." We may experience some change in climate, but those factors will still remain. Is there climate change? Is there global warming? How much snow have you shoveled this winter? There is some climate change. I'm convinced of it. I believe that we are experiencing some global warming. What is causing it? Can we avoid it? There's something that we can do. Well, God says, summer and winter, cold and heat, seed time and harvest, these things will not cease, day and night will not either. Now, God did say on a local level that there will be climate change. He told Israel, if you keep my laws, I'll cause it to rain on your land. I'll give you crops. But if you disobey, I'm going to withhold the rain. I'm going to make your skies like iron. And you will not get a crop, and you will be hungry. And you will really, really hunger. And he carried that out. in the days of Elijah, it didn't rain for 3.5 years. Elijah prayed, and it didn't rain. And then Elijah prayed again, and it rained, and they had crops again. And so there was that local climate change that took place in that occasion. Has there been climate change since the days of Noah? Now, looking at it in a geological way, apparently, reading the geological record, there has been some climate change. How much ice do you think were on the polar caps while they were covered with water? On the Arctic and on the Antarctic. How much ice would have been there? You know, ice floats. And so if they were covered with water, the ice would be have to be floating on top of the water. But that ice wasn't there. When they drill down through the ice on Antarctica and they get down to where the soil is, they drill into some vegetation there, including palm trees that are there frozen underneath the ice. There was a time when there was vegetation growing on Antarctica. But according to what we see in the geological record is that there is accumulation of ice and snow on the polar caps. And that increased as time went on. And there are gouges in the earth, I'll call them that, where it appears like there was glaciers that were at work as far south as the Ohio Valley. And that at one time, those polar caps, those ice caps on the polar regions, extended as far down as Ohio River Valley. And they have been receding and receding. Receding and receding. What would cause that? It would be warming, wouldn't it? It would cause those glaciers to recede. Until today, they're just ice caps instead of a blanket covering much of the northern and southern hemisphere. Now, that's a geological record. We can't prove it. Nobody has pictures. But the evidence is there for it. Have the seas been rising? It would appear so. There's three places, especially on the earth, where it would appear that they, at one time, were dry land. And one of those is the Bering Strait between Asia and Alaska. That water is 160 feet deep. There's another place across the Afura Sea, which is between Australia and the mainland of Asia, and that water is 165 feet deep. And a third place is the English Channel between France and England, which is 150 feet deep. When fishermen drop their lines down to the bottom of those areas, sometimes they bring up some objects that would only be there if people were living there. Especially in the English Channel, they are bringing up farm tools, farm implements, some of them made out of stone. It appears like that land had been farmed at one time, which would tell you that the seas must have risen sometime at least 150 feet or more to have enough of land there for a farm, that land at one time was being farmed. Now, all that is maybe a hypothesis, a theory, but there is the geological record there. That how can we explain that was there unless people were living there? And that would explain how land animals could go from Asia after Noah's Ark, landed, and land animals on Asia would travel across from Europe over to England, across the English Channel on dry land. Hollywood go across from Asia into Alaska and down across into America, and possibly how people would do that, and how animals would get them to Australia and New Zealand and those continents, those islands. It's at least interesting to think about. People have been living in America, in the Western Hemisphere here, for a long, long time. Not too many years ago, there was a settlement found in South America, where modern-day Peru is. There's a, it was called Norte Chico. Norte Chico goes back to about the time of Abraham. And as they dig up that civilization, they find no weapons of warfare. There's no evidence of human sacrifice. They found an infant that was buried there, and they thought, oh, maybe here we find human sacrifice. But no, it appears like no violence was done to that body. Everything was intact, no broken bones, nothing that would show any violence done. Now, you go back to 2000 BC, that's not long after the flood, several generations. But those people were not as violent as what they would have been another eight generations after that, or even six, or even four. When in Mesopotamia, there were continuous warfare, and Abraham moved out, and the Egyptians were fighting, and we have lots of warfare going on. What happened in Mesopotamia? That used to be a fertile crescent, used to be a very fertile plain. But what happened over the years, back around the time of Abraham, is that it started to turn to a dry land. There used to be four rivers there. Today there are only two, the Tigris and the Euphrates. And the land that did not used to have to be irrigated now needs to be irrigated in order to have a crop. And that happened way back before Jesus, back around the time of Abraham and time of the Mesopotamians, the Sumerians, and so on. There was a climate change that took place back there in that land. Today's fears of climate change, a lot of it is based on the emissions of carbon. And you hear a lot about carbon being released into the atmosphere by vehicles, your diesel and your gasoline engines. But there are other sources too of carbon being released into the air, and some climatologists are concerned because of the deforestation that is taking place in various places, such as Brazil, such as Indonesia. And we can see that deforestation does change a climate. If any of you have been to Haiti, you know that. Haiti used to be a country that was covered with huge mahogany trees. They cut down the mahogany forest, sold the lumber, and today it is a very dry land. And they cannot attract rain there like they did before, because the forest has an effect on the air currents and the moisture that it carries, and so Haiti does not have the rainfall that it used to have, and they are trying to replant forests there, but the people need firewood so badly that as soon as a tree gets to have a trunk of a half decent size, they cut it down for firewood, and so they're just not being able to replenish it. And so it is a concern that I believe is valid, what they're doing in the Amazon jungle, down there in Brazil. It's the same thing, cutting down the Amazon jungle in Brazil and turning that rainforest into something other than a rainforest. In Indonesia, they are cutting down the forests, and they are planting the palm trees there for palm oil, but they don't produce the rains that the original forests produced. So there is some valid concern about deforestation, I believe. And there is valid concern about the carbons that are emitted by our vehicles. Although I don't like replacing the catalytic converter on my car. When I remember back to when I was a boy and seeing the news reports in the newspaper, that, and you saw pictures and in magazines, you saw the pictures of the yellow haze that hung over cities called smog. It was because of the emissions from factories and from vehicles and all of that, and the air in this city was polluted. And it was not healthy to breathe that air. And some of you older ones remember when we used to take children out of the city for the summer, and we called them fresh air children. We brought them out to the countryside for fresh air. Today I live in the city of Allentown, and when I come out to the country and I smell the country air, I would like to take some of those country children and take them to the city for fresh air. Where did that city fresh air come from? It came from these environmentalists who were concerned about the emissions of our vehicles and our factories. And today we don't have the yellow haze hanging over San Francisco and New York like it did 40 years ago. It's because of these people who are concerned about polluting the atmosphere. And I believe that's a valid concern. We have spent a lot of money to get there, but I think it was good for us to experience that. When I look at the landfills and I see how the mountains of trash that we are burying, and I am concerned about that. And I gladly recycle plastic and glass and paper, because where are we going to go with all of these trailer loads of trash that you see going out Interstate 78 and 81 and Interstate 80, and they're looking for places to bury it? It's horrendous to think of it, of all that trash and how much of it could be recycled. I believe that we ought to do some of that if we have access to it. And I know that there's some of that being done in the country as well as in the city. And I think that's a good goal. But what is our thoughts? Are we thinking that we are in control of the climate? No, God is in control. And I can't stress that too much tonight. We can do all of these things that affect our environment. And they are good things. And I believe that we should be careful. But we should not get to the place that we think that we are in control instead of God being in control. Well, we could go into some of these things, that statistics that are given, and you know, we could argue with the climatologists and the environmentalists and say how they are so far off and how they are making fools out of themselves while they claim to be wise and all of those kinds of things. But you know, that's not really the point. The point is not that Christians are so much smarter than non-Christians, or that we who trust that God is in control, that we are so much smarter than they are. The point is that we, in simple faith, accept that God is in control and that we are responsible for how we treat our environment. Are temperatures rising? I believe that they are. Does man have any, does man's activity have any effect upon it? Probably does. Should we be fearful? Well, we just read here while the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and heat, winter, day and night shall not cease. I'm not afraid. Are you afraid? I'm not afraid. I think it's going to be okay. I think we're going to be all right. Is there global warming coming? Yes. Global warming is going to be deadly. Second Peter, chapter 3. Verse 7, the heavens and the earth, which are now by the same word, are kept in store, reserved unto fire. That's global warming, against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. But beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is longsuffering to usward, not willing that any should perish, but that all will come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with a fervent heat, and the earth and also the works thereof shall be burned up. And seeing that we know these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought we to be in all holy conversation and godliness, looking for and hastening unto the coming of the day of God, in which the heavens, being on fire, shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for a new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwelleth righteousness. Will we be here when the fire burns up this earth? No. God's not willing that we shall perish. He will take us out. And then he's going to take the wicked out too. He has another place for them to burn, not here. He has another place for them to burn. It won't be on earth. It's another place. It's eternal place. This fire is not going to last eternally. This is a day of vengeance. This fire is going to last, I don't even know if it's going to be a day, but it's going to be on a certain day. And the earth is going to be burned up, and that's going to be global warming like never before when God brings that. Philippians 4, verses 4 through 7. Let your moderation be known unto men, all men. The Lord is at hand. Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication. With thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. The peace of God, which passes all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Can we save our planet? We can't save our planet. When God says, burn her up, she's going to burn. We're not going to save the planet, but we can save our faith. We can save our trust in God. We can maintain our belief that he is going to preserve us until he's finished with us here. And he's going to do with this old earth whatever he wants. Young earth, actually. It's not millions of years. It's only a couple thousand, 6,000 years. And when he's done with it, he'll be done with it, and nobody's going to save it. Nobody's going to destroy it either before he's ready. He's going to destroy it, not us, not man. But God will destroy it, and he's going to destroy it with a terrible heat. May God bless you and keep you.